This podcast is sponsored by Debt Cleanse. Don't file bankruptcy. Try Debt Cleanse first.
Insights, strategies, and conversations you won't hear anywhere else. Always accurate and occasionally entertaining, here's your host, Martin Andelman from MandelmanMatters.com.
Hello, this is Martin Andelman from Mandelman Matters, and this is a Mandelman Matters podcast, and it's a subject that it's like my favorite and least favorite subject at the same time with my favorite guest ever. Today we have Max Gardner, consumer attorney Max Gardner. Many would say he's the number one consumer bankruptcy lawyer in the entire country. He's certainly been around this whole issue of the foreclosure crisis and mortgage servicing as long as anybody. He knows everything about it. We're talking about forbearances today and where we are in the process. There's a number of publications out there that have predicted a wave of foreclosures. Max, are you with me?
I'm with you, Martin. How are you doing this morning?
Good. How are you?
I'm fine.
Yeah, I'm sure you saw the CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, sent out a letter a couple of weeks ago warning, telling servicers there's a wave of foreclosures. I don't know whether that meant a little ripple or a tsunami, but it's apparently going to be a wave. And the other thing is that I was reading, there's a guy, Andrew Wang, who heads up a servicer, I think, called Valon or something. And he was quoted today as saying that he believes that the current environment requires dynamic and flexible servicing, integrating new technology, borrower education, and customer support programs. Having read those four things, I went, well, we're completely screwed.
Absolutely. As far as forbearances, Black Knight, that's a big vendor, supplies a lot of the software and other products for mortgage servicers. They were estimating in the end of January about 2.1 million loans were in forbearance and around 250,000, more than 90 days in default, but not in forbearance. The borrowers had not asked for forbearance in those cases. They're also estimating that the first wave of forbearance ending loans is going to hit in June and July. And they were estimating about 800,000. And then in September and October, about 700,000 more that are mainly 18-month forbearances will be coming out of forbearance. The CFPB did not just send out a letter telling servicers to get prepared to deal with how to resolve these forbearances in terms of modifications. But they've actually amended Reg X. They've sent out for comment. They hadn't made it final yet, but this amendment to Reg would apply to all federally related mortgage loans. And if it is actually approved, it would extend the period for filing a foreclosure for all federally related mortgage loans, not just Fannie, Freddie, or Ginnie Mae, but all federally related loans through the end of this year. And the purpose of that is going to be to give the consumers time to decide which modification coming out of forbearance would be the best for them.
Yeah. So let's start here. My first question is, we used to have, they were saying, this is only a month or so ago, they were saying we had 4 million or so loans in forbearance. And then that number seems to have gone down to 2.5 million.
Those are active in terms of active forbearance. When they're given forbearance numbers, they should be given a gross number that would include consumers that asked for a 3-month forbearance or got a 3-month and they've resolved it, or a 6-month. You got to remember, this started with the CARES Act that was enacted March 27th of last year. Forbearance is nothing new. It started shortly after that time period.
But so now we have some number of maybe 2.5 million or something, but those are only Fannie, Freddie, FHA, VA, USDA. Those don't include any mortgages that aren't Fannie or Freddie or the government insured loans.
They would not, but if this Reg X that the CFPB has proposed, it would apply to any federally related mortgage loan, which means a mortgage that's originated to be sold in interstate commerce, which would cover the non-GSEs and force them to come up with some Reg X. They've got to have some kind of modification program. It may be limited but they've got to have something. And the CFPB wants to make sure that consumers have enough time to go through the evaluation process if they don't take the initial offer, which would be the deferral or a streamlined mod. Then you have to get into some underwriting. And the CFPB wants to make sure that everybody has time to do that. So this regulation would cover both Fannie, Freddie, and Ginnie Mae, the government guaranteed loans, and any other loans, basically 95% or more.
So you're saying that if this new amending of Reg X were to go through, it would stop all foreclosures this year, this calendar year?
It would put a maximum date of December 31. Now, if somebody simply said, I'm going to reject any mod you have to offer and you're a private label deal, and that they've exhausted the options on a mod, then they could seek relief and go ahead and start the foreclosure. But generally, the amendments federally related line would be subject to it, and it would stay on the foreclosure time period through the end of this year, December 31, 2022.
Okay, so they're trying to slow it down. The idea I think it's almost funny to me. It's to give consumers time to assess the different alternatives they'll be presented with. I don't think that's really, is that, first of all, I would be shocked to hear that servicers actually presented more than one option in a 3 or 4 month period of time. It's hard for me to believe this is going to work as smoothly as they're saying, but
the easiest thing for servicers to do, and this would really apply to the federally guaranteed loans, FHA, VA, Fannie and Freddie, is to offer a deferral, which would put the forborne payments at the end of the loan without interest or fees, and let the debtor resume payments. Still going to have to deal with some escrow issues there, but that's the easiest thing for them to do. That may not be, and probably is never going to be, the best modification option for the borrower.
So here's how it starts for people listening. If you have a government loan, a Fannie, Freddie, FHA, and you can resume your payments exactly as they were before, that would be the easiest, that would be the most straightforward thing. If you can just go back to what it was.
That would be a simple yes, no, and generally the servicer rep assigned, and they may assign more than one person. They say a single point of contact, but it may be many. That person should call the borrower 30 days before the forbearance is up. And one of the first things that they're going to ask is, do you think you can resume your regular mortgage payments? That is the monthly payment before we did the forbearance. And if the consumer says yes, then that's basically all they need to go ahead and proceed with a very streamlined deferral model.
Right. That's the best choice, or the easiest choice.
It's the easiest choice. I'm not going to say that's the best.
Right. So now somebody says, look, my wife still hasn't come back to work, or my income hasn't returned to what it was. I can't really make those payments. And somebody already had, say, a 3% interest rate. So then what? Then they say, then you can apply for a modification.
Then they look at what I would call, and I don't want to get into the specific terms because everybody's got their own names and terms. And of course, I'm not giving legal advice, Martin, but the streamline mod is the next thing. And they're looking to deal with the term of that loan, the interest rate. They are looking to see if they can, in a streamlined way, that is without underwriting, come up with a lower payment. And then if they'll ask the borrower, can you make that payment? If they say no, then they have to go to fully underwritten, like with Freddie, a flex.
And that means now you'll have to send in documents in order to do that?
That's right. They want to know, especially your income, bank statements, things of that nature.
Look, I remember the last time around pretty well. You taught me a lot back then about pooling and servicing agreements, which are like 500-page documents that kind of dictate how servicers have to behave. And they are written in the interests of investors, right? The pooling and servicing agreements are there to protect the investors. How is that going to factor in this time around? Last time around, there was a federal program called HAMP, and it had a waterfall, and it said the interest rate will be 2%, and it had a bunch of different rules. I don't see that this time around. I don't see a HAMP telling me what to do about interest rates or terms. And how will this end up? Will there be conflicts between the investor won't let us do this or the investor won't? Will the pooling and servicing agreement clash with the loan modification?
Well, about 65% of the market are federally guaranteed loans, Fannie, Freddie, FHA, VA, Rural Housing, USDA. The rest of the market would be the private label deals. And by that, that's just a private investor, not a governmental agency, that is buying and selling and securitizing mortgage loans into securitized pools. And they can come up with their own guidelines themselves about what they intend to do consistent with federal law. They still have to comply with federal law regulation. They can decide they want to have one program or two or three or four, and they can decide the characteristics of each program. We cannot, the government cannot tell them what to do.
And if
so each one's going to be a little different. What we have tried to do is to look at a final mod that's been done by a private label trust and try to, by reverse engineering, try to figure out what kind of formula, if any, they're having that they're using. So we've got some idea what program.
Wow. All right. That is the only way to really do that, because the servicer is not going to tell you what's allowed and what isn't.
The beauty of federally guaranteed loans like Fannie Freddie is everything that they have to do is published online. They have written regulations, written rules, limitations on legal fees. They cover everything. The problem with a private label, which is a non-governmental entity, is there's nothing published anywhere. So you can't find those.
Right. And the servicer, when you call up, it's not like you can call your servicer and say, tell me what the possibilities are. I'd like to see a menu of options on how to resolve this, and I'll choose from the menu. That's not how that works.
I don't ever call the servicers myself. If my debtors call, I ask them to confirm it with a written request for information or notice of error, designated address on the monthly billing statement.
This podcast is sponsored by Debt Cleanse. If debt has become a problem, you need to check out Debt Cleanse. Don't file bankruptcy. Try Debt Cleanse first. It's only $29 a month. You get the first month free, and you can cancel anytime. What do you have to lose? Debt Cleanse can help you get out of debt. Creditors make mistakes all the time. Debt Cleanse helps you catch them. Debt Cleanse can do more for your financial situation than anything else. You've got to give it a try. You reach Debt Cleanse simply at 1-800-500-0908. That's 1-800-500-0908, and tell them you heard about them on Mandelman Matters. You have to write down everything.
Yeah, if you're going to call them, you know, they're going to give you a name. It may not be their actual name, but the name has been assigned to them in the collection department or whatever department they're in. So, you know, anything you can say or any identification information that's used, write it down, including the date and time, and do that.
You just don't know how this is going to end up. Look, I saw last time around pretty up close and personal, and the problem is that when the person you're talking to on the phone at the servicer probably has no discretion to do anything.
They have a script, Martin, and to the extent they can read the script and know the right one to use, that's about the extent of what they can do.
Yeah, exactly. So the homeowner ends up getting nervous because they don't really get a resolution at that level. And then they wait some undetermined amount of time to hear a yes or a no. And the process stinks as far as I'm concerned. I've never seen it go really particular. Even ones that worked out didn't really go well along the way. They were annoying for everybody involved. And I'm just wondering, you've seen servicers this whole time. Do you believe they made made so many positive changes after 2014 that this time it'll be better, or are we going to see the same stuff going on?
I anticipate we'll see pretty much the same thing. I think they're better. The problem is when you've got this forbearance program, you've got 2.1 million loans or however many we have, the numbers certainly are nothing we can certified anyway. But that's a large volume of loans for any servicer, no matter what percent you have, to deal with at one time. And they simply don't have a sufficient number of trained service technicians that are really mortgage underwriters that have any idea what they're doing. And that's the problem. I fear the volume will overcome their ability.
Right.
To
and, you know, the real problem here, so that everybody, I can just say this bluntly, is that everybody wants a lower interest rate or a lower payment. Everybody, 100% of the people would like to have a lower mortgage payment. And so when you call in and you say, gee, I can't make the payment as I was before and I want my loan modified, there's the fundamental problem is they don't want to do that unless you actually need it. And it's hard to tell who needs what and hard for every. This is a hard thing to do. Right? Modifying a loan is a hard thing to do.
Well, not on the streamline, Mike. When they've got a regular program that they're going to offer to modify that loan that will increase your payments. So there's really nothing that goes into that at all.
Right. But if that doesn't work,
you've got to go to something that's either partially underwritten, I'm going to call it, or something close to fully underwritten. They're going to be looking at your monthly income, your expenses, what is the current loan to value ratio on that house? Those kind of factors will all be coming into play.
And the other thing is this time around, wouldn't you say the consumer law side of it is better prepared than last time? I mean,
I think with what the CFPB has under Reg X and with the current UCFPB, yes, certainly we do.
Yeah, I think it's got to be better on the defend the consumer side because we know what didn't work last time and so forth. But I don't know that I have a lot of confidence that it's that much different on the servicer side.
Really an underwriter that's dealing with the loan mod. You've got service techs that know how to look up payment dates and the amount of charges they've added to your loan since last month and the current balance, they can look that up. When you get into the weeds of a serious modification, that's a real problem. That's why I fear that the first thing they're going to try to do is say, we'll put all the payments you've had in forbearance at the end. Can you just start making your regular payments next month? And they're going to try to sell that.
Right.
That sounds good to a consumer. Oh, I don't have to pay that now. And you're going to put it at the end with no interest. That's the easiest thing for them to do. And it may be the worst thing for the consumer, but I think they're really going to sell that hard. And you don't need to be an underwriter to do that.
That's right. But you don't have to get pushed into it either.
Absolutely. And I think they're going to try to push as many as they can into that. So they're going to try to get the consumer to say, that sounds good to me, or yes, I can resume the payments. Like I said, the problem with that is at some point, 2 or 3, 4 months after you do it, they're going to do an escrow review and realize there was a shortage in an escrow account when you agreed to that, and therefore your escrow payments are going to go up. They can give you up to 60 months if you're Fannie or Freddie to make up those payments.
So this has to do with property taxes, right?
Taxes and insurance, right.
And insurance. So if you haven't been paying those in the forbearance, just because they tack on the principal and interest payment, that doesn't mean they're going to tack on the property taxes.
What they'll do is if during the forbearance they've advanced their own money to pay taxes and insurance, they're going to capitalize that along with the payments that were in forbearance. And, of course, what that's going to do is put the escrow account at zero, which in most cases, there's going to be an insufficient amount to cover the next 12 months. So they're going to do an escrow review at some point and realize that escrow account is short, and they're going to say, we need an extra, $1,800 or $150 a month over and above your regular escrow payment to cover this. Fannie and Freddie can give you up to 60 months to pay that back each month in equal payments.
But if that money adds up to a significant amount, so this is very important. What Max is saying here is if they're offering you to get out of the forbearance by just making your old payment again, what you're saying is 3 months later, that old payment could go up by a couple, whatever, a few hundred dollars a month because of the shortage in the escrow.
It's definitely going to go up because when they give you the forbearance resolution, if they've advanced money during the forbearance period to cover taxes and insurance, they're going to capitalize that along with the missed payments, but that automatically puts your escrow account at zero. And that's not going to be sufficient to fund that escrow account in the next 12 months. So you're going to get an increase in payment, I'd say within 90 days. I would want to know that right off the bat.
This is super important. There's going to be three things as we wrap this up for today. This is very important. When you call your servicer and they say, gee, can you make your old payment again? And you think the old payment was $1,500. I should be able to make that. Everything looks fine. 3 months later, they review the escrow account and realize that you had whatever dollars in property taxes and insurance that weren't paid, that $1,500 could become $1,800 or it could become $2,000. You really need to nail that down before you say
right.
Yes.
Right. I would say, okay, I know I'm going to have some additional escrow payments due. Can you tell me what those are going to be? And how long do I have to pay those back? Do I have to pay them back in 12 months or can I have 60? You need to know those details. Well, they put you right into that, what I call COVID-19 deferral.
Yeah, we're gonna publish this on on Mandelman Matters. We're gonna publish this everywhere. The other thing that Max is telling you, you hear him say, write everything down. That's the other thing. If things go, you may never need that written record. But if things aren't going well, and you need to talk to an attorney about this, that written record really is going to make a difference. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll ask, have my clients ask their names. What's their manager's name? They may give you the real name. They may not. But at least you've got the code name they used. So, I tell people, write down everything, including the number you called, the time that you called. You can tell if a real person answers that number or a computer answers it and farms it to whoever's open in their system.
Gotcha. And then I'll tell you my last closing piece of advice is to call a servicer requires incredible patience.
Yeah.
So incredible patience. So don't do it when you're on your way out the door. Don't do it when you have something to do 15 minutes later. This requires a lot of breathing, a lot of deep breathing, a lot of patience. And I would tell everybody that just to remember the person who's answering the phone is really not the problem.
No. And the other thing, Martin, is to keep in mind, they are recording everything you say. Believe me, the servicers record every phone call that I know coming in. And they'll say that. They should give you that. Fair debt collection warning and recording notice before you actually talk to somebody. But keep that in mind. You do not want to get upset, use profanity or things like that during these calls because that's going to come back to be a problem.
I hadn't thought about that, but that's right. I always tell people that, look, you can always be a jerk later. You catch more flies with honey than vinegar, the old axiom. But what Max is saying is also important. They're recording this call. Remember, the call you're on is being recorded. This wouldn't be a great time to start screaming.
Right. I try to tell my clients this is going to be played back to the jury or judge at some point. So keep in mind.
Very important. Max, thank you so much for taking the time to do this morning. I know you're busy. You've got I'm sure you've got a number of these cases going on. And we'd like to have you back. I am going to call Bruce Jacobs on that recent decision, and then we'd like to have you back to comment on that.
Mark.
All right. Look, thanks a lot for taking the time this morning, and we will
talk
soon.
Good to see you. Bye-bye.
That was Max Gardner, and if you've followed anything about mortgages or the mortgage meltdown, the name, he is absolutely famous for this kind of thing. He's also trained, over 10,000 consumer attorneys around the country in how to represent consumers in these situations. And so I do think this time around, we are better prepared, but I just want to make sure everybody understands the dynamic here. A mortgage servicer is not really set up to modify loans. They're set up to service loans. They're basically set up to send out monthly statements and collect payments and post the money to the places they're supposed to go and keep records and reporting. That's really what they do. And if you think about it, nobody would ever call their mortgage servicer under normal circumstances. They're not set up to take a million phone calls this week because that doesn't normally happen. So this is a difficult situation for homeowners, but it's also a difficult situation for mortgage servicers. Now, it's very easy to just hate the banks, and we go to the back to the we hate the banks, we hate the woman on the phone told me this, and it wasn't that. Look, that's just going to happen. That's why I said it takes patience. So when you go to call your servicer, do it early and never avoid phone calls. If somebody's calling you from something and they leave you a message, call them back. Don't avoid them, because it won't help. It'll just make things worse. And also, if they're frustrating you, or this is a frustrating process, try to stay calm. Try to let the person know that you understand this isn't their fault, and try to work and do what they want you to do and try to follow the rules. And hopefully that'll work out okay. But if it doesn't, keep a record of everything you've done. As Max pointed out, and as others have on this podcast have pointed out, just keep a notebook. It's like a mortgage diary, a modification diary, and just write down everything that happens. That can come in handy later. So look, nobody knows how this is going to go. I tried to read everything I could find over the last couple days about the wave of foreclosures. The CFPB is certainly concerned. That's what's coming. A number of others are. And then, of course, you have some optimists that say it won't be as bad this time around because the banks are in better shape or credit is more available. I don't know. Reading it on all sides, I'm not sure. I would say that I have very little confidence that this modification, get out of a forbearance process, is going to go smoothly. So if you're in that situation and you have a forbearance, I would say take this very seriously. Talk to your servicer in advance of the forbearance ending. Stay in touch with them. Take the calls. Send what they need to send, whatever they ask you to send in. Try to play by those rules. And then if you get stuck, then you know that it might be time to talk to a lawyer and have somebody else get involved. But hopefully that isn't necessary. And when it is, make sure you're talking to an attorney that knows this area. It's not enough to just be a lawyer. You have to be a lawyer who has worked in this area before. And Max Gardner and his bootcamp lawyers certainly are the stars of this show, if you will. They know what they're doing. So I really appreciated Max coming on today, and we will have him back to keep tracking this because, look, I'm sure this is going to become a bigger and bigger topic over the months ahead. And we'll just hope that we come out of the forbearances as well as hopefully we've come through the pandemic. I don't know. Hopefully it's over. All right. Anyway, listen, thanks for listening. I hope you found it interesting. I hope you found it valuable. And I'll be back next week talking to Jim Veal, CPA. He's going to talk about the tax ramifications and the tax issues of having a reverse mortgage versus a forward mortgage, and what are the different things that you can do under the new tax code. So we're looking forward to that. Until next time, this is Martin Andelman from Mandelman Matters, and this has been a Mandelman Matters podcast.
This episode is complete. Stay tuned for more updates on all the political, social, and economic and legal aspects of the financial crisis. Complicated subjects made easy to understand at mandelmanmatters.com.